At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
Sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, I'm destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like a rain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a friend of mine. He is a father, a very dedicated family man. He's one of the most positive and inspirational people on Twitter in general, and this is Tyler Tott. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, brother. It's a very big honor to be on here, Zuby. You're a man that I really admire and look up to. You brought me to Twitter and helped me escape that corporate world a few years ago. So I really value, you know, everything you put out and do. So real big honor to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
No doubt, man. That's you inspire me as well. So I'm honored to hear that. So for people who are not familiar with you, Tyler, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man. So I had kind of a normal upbringing, two parents that loved me. Then I went to college, and at university, man, I had something happen that's pretty unusual. I deposited $60 into an online poker site. And within a year, I was up about 60K. And I realized I had a real knack for poker. So I ended up dropping out of college my sophomore year. I went on to make close to seven figures in my early 20s. Kind of turned my back on a lot of things I think were really important to me at that time when you kind of have an influx of money. Just made a lot of wrong choices as far as that party lifestyle, thinking that, you know, I was something that I wasn't, kind of ego was out of control. And some things came crashing down in my late 20s that really made me turn and reflect and kind of see what's actually important in life and really kind of center myself and focus on those things again. So now I just get to share a lot of the lessons I've learned along the journey. I'm a 39-year-old dad of three. We fostered seven children, reunited five, and we adopted two. And we have one biological daughter, too. So that's probably my favorite thing in life is being a father, a husband. And I just try and make every room I go in a little bit better when I leave. Right. That's kind of my goal every day.
That's awesome, man. I love that. Tell me a little bit more about your childhood and growing up. Where did you grow up?
We grew up in central Illinois, man. So a massive town called Farmersville, population 700. My grandfather was the mayor. My dad was my coach in every sport. Some of my best friends from life still to this day, you know, grew up with those guys playing backyard ball every day. And it was really cool, man. I mean, back then, you know, we're talking 30 years ago, I feel like my parents we'd get up, we'd eat breakfast in the summer, and my mom would say, be home at noon for lunch. And we'd just kind of go play sports all day. You know, we had a good group of kids, stayed out of trouble for the most part because of sports. And I'd say sports was probably the biggest part of my life. We played baseball, basketball, football, soccer, ran cross country, tennis, pretty much everything. We were into sports, man. So that was what dictated childhood for us.
That's awesome, man. You got siblings?
I have one older sister. Yeah, my sister Kelly. She is 5 years older than me. And I think it was hard growing up because, you know, we're 5 years apart. So we didn't necessarily like super close. We never went to school together. But since becoming an adult, and she's such a fantastic mom, and I lean into her wisdom a lot because she's grown two successful boys now that are 15 and 13. Shout out to my nephews. They love you too, Zuby. Carly and Bryce.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, man, we're really close to this day, man. She still lives back in Illinois.
That's awesome, man. And so tell me about the story when you went to college and getting into poker, because I don't know all that much about how that journey began.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. So I grew up just always kind of having a strategic mind. I loved playing board games. I loved playing games as a kid. And something happened. We watched the movie Rounders. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Matt Damon film. And so a few of our buddies just said, hey, man, let's all throw $5 in and play poker. And I just kind of had a knack for it right away. I remember I won that first game. I took the $15 I won and I went and bought a book. for like 13. And I studied a bunch of odds and statistics, and I made $60 just playing with buddies. I remember that first year in college. And so I deposited that 60 online and thought, well, let's see if I can, you know, I can beat my buddies here in the dorm. Let's see if I can beat some people out there too. And I just got hooked, man. I started running it like a business. I had Excel spreadsheets of what time of the day I was playing. I was studying my opponents off the table and just had a knack. I started moving up the stakes pretty quickly. You know, I was playing for pennies when I had $60, and all of a sudden I was playing for thousands of dollars and even tens of dollars some days. And so, yeah, you know, I don't think my parents were super thrilled when I drove home one day and said, you know, I went from a 3.8 GPA to like a 1.9 GPA when I found poker. But I remember telling them, you know, I made more this month than I'm going to make as a, you know, I was going to be a teacher at the time. And so I'm going to pursue this. And, you know, I think it was a little rough going there for a little bit. My parents had a very religious upbringing too. And I turned my back on a lot of that for a while. And if I could go back and do a lot of those things over, I'd certainly choose a different way I dealt with that. But I remember just being so arrogant and just saying, you know, I'm making 60K a month. Like it's, everything's going to take care of itself. You know, like I would fly my friends to anywhere all over the world we wanted to go for the next 4 or 5 years. I was kind of like the meal ticket for a lot of my friends. And then, you know, some of the girls that maybe you attract kind of wrong when you're kind of leading with, well, I drive a Benz, these things. And so that kind of started to snowball a little bit, man. And it would come crashing down later in my life for sure, but kind of lived that high life for 4, 5, 6 years, just thinking I was probably something that I wasn't and trying to pretend to be something that I wasn't. I mean, brother, you know me now. And I mean, this is a fancy shirt for me. It's my preacher friend got it for me. I got some Zuby apparel back there. It was probably the fanciest I get. But back then I was wearing like Gucci clothes and Prada shoes and just trying to be somebody that I really wasn't. And I think the money kind of got me lost in that for a little bit.
Mm. And you moved to Las Vegas as well, right?
So I had a condo in Las Vegas and we still had like a house back in Illinois. I ended up meeting a gal here in Las Vegas and getting married at like 23. And that was probably, you know, not in hindsight, we probably weren't ready to get married at 23. But again, you know, everybody warned us and we just said, we got a lot of money. We have a lot of fun together. We'll be fine. You know, and that was one of the things that came crashing down. I think I was like 27 and playing in the World Series of Poker. And she just called me one day and said, like, I'm leaving you. I'm seeing someone else, you know, and I was at our condo in Vegas. She was back at our house in Illinois. We just had this very like transactional kind of relationship, not really like a deep seated values kind of relationship. And so I kind of went on a tailspin after that for about a year or two, man. It kind of all the things that I had been valuing, I really realized that those are my house was so to speak, built on sand. Right. And once that came crumbling down, I turned even more, I hate to say it, but into the party lifestyle, into doing, you know, substances and booze and having the best table at the party became very important to me at the nightclubs and things like that. And it wasn't until actually, shout out to Eddie Lowe and my preacher friend who actually just mailed me this a couple of days ago, who I reached out to him one night at like midnight, man. I'll never forget. I sent an email and I just said something to the effect of, Eddie, I have everything everyone tells me should make me happy, right? Like I have a sports car. I've got money in the bank. I've got a sick condo here in Chicago. I'm dating some pretty attractive females. I'm like, all my friends tell me I should be happy, but I'm miserable. I can't seem to really be happy, you know? And I started having coffee with this guy, man. He's a preacher from my hometown. And he just started asking me some really good questions about what I really wanted out of life. Not what maybe society or some of these other people told me that I wanted, but what I really wanted. And I started to realize those things were very different from where my focus had been going. And so I started to really shift my mindset around then, probably about the age of 30, 31, and kind of started on a little self-improvement journey, getting into the gym, some things like that around that period. And then the next big leap, I would say, was 3-4 years later when I found guys like you, guys like Zach Hommel, these other guys that really have aligned values and a bigger sense of themselves than just making themselves happy, right? And so that was probably the next big leap where I went and been on that journey now for about 5 years, man. I'm just trying to give back and have a deeper meaning to my life than just collecting stuff.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me because, you know, obviously as someone who knows you and, you know, we've hung out is like, I know this phase of your life, right? So it's interesting because it's like, you know, you've gone through these, almost like you've lived these different lifetimes. And so it's always interesting to see where someone is now, of course, but also to understand the history, understand how they how they got there. Everyone's got a different story. And one things I love most about, you know, doing this podcast and even listening to others is trying to get, you know, trying to go deep and do the real talk on the story, not just the tip of the iceberg and, okay, look, like this is where things landed, but, oh, look, this is what it took to actually get through that. So of course, in the process, you met your now wife. When did you meet your wife?
So super grateful the way that worked out, man, because she's a much better person than I am. And Zuby, if I had been wearing Prada shoes when I met her, she wouldn't have looked twice at me. She's not really into stuff, man. So she runs a nonprofit.
She's more Louboutin or like...
No, Gucci. Man. She's more like, hey, it's on sales. It's on sale, like, cool. Just gonna pick one up. but yeah, I was in the midst of kind of talking to my pastor. I just started back in church. And then I found one of my buddies was like, hey, this girl is hosting a charity event here in Chicago. You know, I think you might like her. I saw a picture of her and I said, yes, I think I might like her. So I actually reached out to her and started reading all of her blogs. She'd been blogging for about a decade at what she was doing. In Eswatini, it used to be Swaziland, country of Eswatini in South Africa. And she dedicated her entire life to building schools over there. And she specializes in helping orphans with education. And it entails a lot more than education. She's, you know, they call her mom, right? She was going over there, living there 150 days a year and making next to nothing doing it. And, you know, she has a PhD from Purdue. She could be making hundreds of thousands of dollars, but she felt this was her mission and God had really called her to do this. And so I remember just like reading this at night. And this is a guy who had just been out to nightclubs spending, you know, $1,000 on a night out, right? And I remember reading this and seeing, you know, you can feed a family who hasn't eaten of four for $50 for a whole quarter over there. Mm-hmm. You know? And I just felt this really sense of like, man, I got to be doing more with my life. And so I reached out to her and I just said, hey, could I help you set up for this fundraiser? You don't know me, but I really appreciate the things you put out there and I'd love to help. And so she said, yeah, that's great. I invited her to church. When she came in, man, we ended up taking like a 6-hour walk right after the event. And she was kind of dating a guy, man. It's kind of a funny story. She was dating a guy before she took her last trip over there, but she came back with some kind of like rash on her arm, something that she had got. And the guy had said, when that heals, maybe me and you can start dating again. And so she told me this story, as I think she could tell I was pretty interested. And I basically took my face and I buried my face in her rash. And I said, any guy who's afraid of that rash does not deserve you. And she, bro, she started laughing instantly. And I think I kind of had her hooked right there, man. So we dated like 6 months. We ended up proposing after that. I've been to Eswatini now with her 7 times. That's become a big part of my mission. Going back again in 6 weeks with her. To help build homes and dig pilatrines and all kinds of things over there. So it's, yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't know that that you were going to Eswatini that much. My sister actually used to live there.
I remember you saying that. Yeah. Man. Have you been?
I've never been there. Oh, no, man. I've never been. It's a very, very small country, like very tiny.
I think it's 1 million total. Yeah. So actually they're a smaller country than you, Zuby, as far as Twitter followers.
That's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. Well, bro, I'll tell you what, anytime you want to go, I bet we could pop off a fundraiser on Twitter. We get your trip funded, man. We get you over there playing with some kids anytime you want to go, man.
Okay, that's interesting, man. Like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. We won't discuss it on the podcast. That's awesome, man.
Our podcast today is sponsored by Athletic Greens. I take AG1 by Athletic Greens every day for better gut health, increased energy, and immune system support. As someone who is constantly on the go, AG1 helps me to cover my nutritional bases with a simple, tasty, easy-to-mix drink. I take AG1 in the morning, and it makes me feel ready to take on my entire day. Why take a bunch of different pills when you can just mix one scoop of powder and water once per day? AG1 was designed for ease of use, so you can live healthier and better without having to do a lot. One single serving delivers a powerful blend of vitamins, minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, and much more. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you 1 free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/Zuby. That's athleticgreens.com/Zuby and get your free year supply of vitamin D as well as 5 free travel packs with your order. Go check it out.
So I'm curious, actually. So what was that? I'm curious to know more about the sort of changes in your mindset and values during this sort of multi-year period. So from going from being professional poker player, living this sort of high life, Playboy style in Vegas or in Illinois, and then, you know, sort of, I don't know, coming back down to this ground level of refinding your values and your direction in life, and then, you know, going on, obviously getting married and doing the charity work that you do, going on fostering children. This is such a, it's such a shift. So I'm really curious to know, like, what was going on in your mind at this time.
Yeah, I'd say this is probably about an 18-month shift, man. And anybody who would have known me in Chicago during that season would have said, like, Ty's really happy, right? Like, I was like the life of the party guy, like standing up on the bar, like drinking the champagne. Let's do another round. Like, I was that guy. But then everybody go home. Like, the party eventually had to end, right? And I can't tell you the number of nights, man, that I would cry myself to sleep, that I would just think, like, there's got to be more to life than the next party. Oh, the next big DJ comes in next week. Let's get the table. Like, right, that was my whole existence. And going to the casino to play poker, to when you have a certain amount of money doesn't even really matter anymore. If, you know, like, so just it seemed like it was all for nothing. And I remember thinking a lot of these times, like, what's the point of my life, you know? And I hate to admit this, but there were many nights I'd sit up on my roof 2-3 in the morning and I'd just think, I don't even, what's it matter if I wake up tomorrow? You know, it just doesn't even matter. And so when I reached out to my friend, Preacher Eddie, and he started asking me a lot of these questions, he challenged me. He said, you know, faith is very personal, but I'd urge you to explore it, Ty. You know, and I think, you know, I grew up in the church, but it's something it was never my own, I would say. It was more, my family just went to church. That's just what we did for a while. And then when I went to college, I decided I didn't want that, you know. And I think I'd always thought of maybe religion or faith as rules. Well, you know, God tells me I can't do this, so I can't have fun, you know? And I always viewed it that way. And Preacher Eddie kind of told me, man, it's more about your heart, right? Like, it's more like God loves you. He's there for you. He wants to give you a purpose and a mission and all these things. And so he actually challenged me pretty early on to just say one prayer, because I told him, I want to get my life right, but I don't really know about all this faith stuff, you know? And he said, hey, Ty, for 30 straight days, just pray one prayer. God, if you're real, just show yourself to me. And so I respected him a lot, and I didn't really know what that meant, but I started praying it. And my first miracle happened about 21 days in, man. I was actually in Vegas, still prayed that prayer every morning, and I went for a jog after a poker session. It's like midnight. And at the time, man, I had an iPod shuffle. I don't know if you remember these things, but they would hold like 10,000 songs. You didn't know the song. You just hit shuffle and it'd pick one. And all my songs then are Tupac, Biggie, you know. this is what I work out to. This is what I listen to. And so I go for a run and I hit shuffle and Tupac comes on and I'm running. The next song comes on and I don't know to this day how that song got on there, because I never listened to Christian music, but it was Holy is the Lord God Almighty. And something stirred up in me when I heard that song come on, and I actually got angry and I started yelling and I said, you know, God, you let my life get here. How could you do that? And I hit shuffle. And so the next song is probably a biggie, you know? And so I'm sprinting and I'm feeling just rage. And the next song that came on was Holy is the Lord God Almighty again. And brother, I dropped to my knees at that point alone by myself. And I said, all right, God, you showed yourself to me. I don't know what it means to have a mission bigger than myself. I don't know what it means to trust you. But at this point, I'm going to surrender some of these things that I know are not right. I don't know what it looks like, but I want to take my first step back to Jesus, back to you. And so that was my first step, man. And I met my wife probably 5-6 months after that had happened. She wouldn't have talked to me. She wouldn't show me time of day had that never happened, right? And she's had a really big faith and a big personal faith. And so we started going to church together a lot and making that a priority. And really God has spoken to me. And I, brother, I could tell you 100 miracles at this point, right? Over the last decade since that happened. But that was kind of my big mission, bigger than myself kind of thing.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. And so let's carry on with the journey. So you met your wife, you date for 6 months, you propose, and then how long after that till you're married?
So we get married about 8 months after that, and okay. We had a doctor tell my wife that she could not get pregnant. So we go, and for our honeymoon, we did 5 weeks serving in Eswatini on a mission, like just our mission trip there. And we
as a honeymoon?
That was our honeymoon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
5 days in between that to go to Joburg and some other areas and kind of far Cape Town. We hit Cape Town up for like 3 days. So that was our honeymoon. And on the honeymoon, we ended up getting pregnant. So when the doctor told us we couldn't get pregnant. So then we come home.
More reason to question doctor.
I'm not trying to get strikes. I'm not going
to go down that path. But hey, some of them are good, but some of them don't know what they're talking about.
Yes,
man. My dad's a doctor, so I can say these things.
And my wife's dad's a doctor, and he's a great
exactly.
doctor. So it's, you know, like any profession, good and bad, right? But then we come back, and then kind of real life hits us for the first time. We're super in love, but now all of a sudden we've got a screaming newborn. I go back to college full time because I don't want to play poker, you know, as a job anymore. So I go back to college full time. I take a job, my first job ever at 31 at a bank. I get promoted like 4 times in the next 2 years to where I started out as just a teller at a bank. Now I'm managing the whole bank and running it. And I think I lost myself a little bit there. It was kind of a 3-step forward, 2-step back kind of deal. Our marriage was rocky at best that first couple years with a new child. I think everybody tells you, you just get married and it's happily ever after, right? Nobody tells you, you got to put in work. You got to focus on the right things. You got to keep, you know, rowing towards each other every day and growing together. And so, we had our struggle a little bit there back in Illinois, and big thing happened, man. We moved out to Vegas and I had about 7 weeks by myself. I got a new job out here and my wife wanted my daughter to finish school, our daughter to finish her pre-K. So they stayed in Illinois. I had 7 weeks here by myself in this big house in Vegas. We didn't even have a TV, a mattress. I literally just slept on the floor with no furniture for like 7 weeks, but it ended up being the greatest gift, man. I dropped to my knees right when Annie left and I knew I was by myself. And I just said, okay, God, like I'm all in for the first time in my life. Like I don't want to be half in, half out with my finances, with any part of my life. I want to give it to you. And that is when I found you, Zach Hommel, Ryan Stevens, a lot of guys on Twitter that I just felt like were pouring into me every day, man. I never knew social media could back then. I used to argue with people about like Nancy Pelosi. That was the stuff I was doing on social media. And I told people it was so toxic, but I found people like you who were just talking about mindset and growing and these habits and how you could choose to see the world different. Maybe media didn't have your best interest at heart. And I remember the day I took off the CNN app, the Fox News app, I took all these apps off and I said, I'm just going to put my mind on what I can control. Mm-hmm. And that 7 weeks, man, was the biggest period of growth in my life as a 35-year-old man, where that's when I started to start, you know, maybe sharing a little bit on social media. Was I saw guys like you I really looked up to. I remember praying for God to let me have 1,000 teammates. It would be so cool if I could impact 1 or 2 people, how neat that would be. And, you know, I sit here today with 110,000 or whatever, and just I don't wake up a day now where I don't have people in my DMs telling me that, you know, that message that I was able to give them meant a lot and things like that. And so it's, I feel like when you go all in, you get to see a lot of miracles, but mm-hmm. a lot of Jesus people or a lot of people of faith, they never really get to that spot. They're kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And so I'll forever look back to that time where I just had 7 weeks then. And we never added TV after that. We've never had a cable. Like for the last 4 years, I won't allow that stuff in my home anymore, man. Like we're only going to focus on what we're going to do. And that's like having dance parties every night with the family, not family with Carlton Says or Rachel Maddow, any of these people. Like we're going to cultivate the kind of life that we want. And we got really intentional around that. My wife hopped on board right away. And it's just been blessed, pretty blessed ever since, I would say.
Why do people with normal cholesterol levels get heart attacks? Heart surgeon Dr. Philip Ovadia believes it's because of poor metabolic health, not cholesterol. After performing over 3,000 heart surgeries, Dr. Ovadia decided to work on prevention and not just treatment. In his book, Stay Off My Operating Table, Dr. Ovadia shows you his 7 principles of metabolic health and how to use them to reduce your risk of heart disease. Get your free audiobook version of Stay Off My Operating Table at ifixhearts.com/Zuby. That's ifixhearts.com/Zuby to get your free audiobook. Go check it out.
That's amazing, dude. Honestly, it's humbling to hear that. And it's so inspiring because, you know, I do so many interviews, and one something people always ask is, you know, like, what's your goal? What's your mission? Why are you so outspoken? Why do you think like this? Why do you have these views? Why, you know, and the thing with me, which I think most people who follow me realize, but you know, perhaps some of my detractors or critics don't, is that I'm all about people. I'm all about inspiring and motivating people in different avenues, mentally, physically, encouraging people to think better, encouraging people to recognize their potential and capability for greatness, and also to just exemplify it, right? Not just talk about it, but hey, I'm on this journey myself. You know, I'm in my mid-30s, and I've been through this whole journey with my music and with all these other things, and now with social media, and I've done this and I've grown this, and you know, I'm trying to, you know, lead and just do it. And then what I love is this ripple effect, right? That's to me the most amazing thing, because so many people don't fully realize that the ripple effect is both positive and negative. It can be both, right? If you go out there and you're just angry at the world and you're putting that out there online and offline, and you're just venting your anger and your frustration and you're attacking people and you're calling people out and you're just doing this, it actually encourages, inspires, and motivates other people to do the same, right? And then that spreads outward. And so you're kind of just spreading this negative all the time. But actually, if you live positively and you do your best, like none of us are, you know, we're all human. None of us are going to be perfect with this. But if you do your best to try to fulfill your own potential and encourage and inspire other people to do the same, then whether or not you even realize it, those other people then go out, and if they do the same, even to some degree, right? They do the same to some degree, and that inspires and motivates other people, right? So I start going to the gym because, you know, I was a fat teenager and I wanted to get in shape and train or whatever. And then people see me and the progress I'm making, and they see me going to the gym, and they see me doing my pull-ups, and they see me doing it. And they're like, man, that's inspiring. That's motivating. And they go out and they do the same. And then someone else sees them and they're like, man, I remember that guy. That guy used to be fat and now he's in shape. Maybe like I should go. And it just spreads. It just spreads. And especially now, I think this has always been the case, but now that we have the internet and social media, which of course is this double-edged sword, is this ripple effect is multiplied by a thousandfold, right? So whereas in the past, I don't know, in the 80s, in the 90s, if we were doing this, you know, sure, we can impact people who are physically close around us and who know us, but now it's like you can be one individual and, you know, you can have a nation of people following. like it's crazy. It freaks me out sometimes. Like it's dope, but it scares me. Sometimes I look at those numbers and I'm like, holy crap. Like I was just looking at the numbers even of this podcast before, and I'm like, millions and millions of people have downloaded and listened to these conversations that I'm just sitting here in a room. You're sitting there in a room. We're just having a conversation, and thousands, tens of thousands of people at least are going to hear this conversation. It doesn't matter if they're in Australia or New Zealand or Nigeria or Eswatini or the UK. Like that is it. I'm just like, this is magic. So people complain a lot about social media, and I get it because the negativity can ripple outwards, right? There's so much opportunity to frustrate people and divide people and get them at each other's throats and fighting. But I'm like, man, with this same tool, do you realize like what you can do? Like both of us, we're just, you know, some people might look at us now and be like, oh, well, you know, you're this or you're that. It's like, bro, like we're both guys. Like we're you know, it's like we started at zero followers. Nobody knew anything you're doing. No one. And then it's like, you know what? I'm just going to document some of my life. I'm just going to share my thoughts. I'm going to do what I do. Next thing you know, boom, 1,000 people are following you. 5,000, 10,000. 20,000, 50,000, 100,000. You know what I mean? If you keep on going, but dude, if you keep on going, you'll eventually hit 1 million followers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. Assuming the platforms don't get nuked or, you know, you don't get banned or whatever, right? Like if you keep on going, it might take, you know, years and years and years. It does, but, and I'm just like, so many people can do that and they don't even realize it. Just like, I don't know, someone who's out of shape doesn't realize that they can really get in shape and actually could have like an amazing, inspiring physique. They probably, it seems so far from their reality that they don't recognize the potential. But I'm like, dude, like if you've got something of value to offer the world and you, someone might just think, oh, well, I'm just the average guy. It's like, dude, like most people are in some way, but that doesn't mean that you cannot inspire thousands or even potentially millions.
Yeah, you talk about that ripple effect right there. And I think we're so blessed to live in this time, man, because like you kind of alluded to it, but like my dad, he was just going to affect, you know, and he affected a lot of people in his community, right? Where we grew up and, you know, but we do have the ability to broadcast now. And I think it's such a gift and it's such a blessing. And again, it's when I found that out from guys like you and Zach and Ryan, see, I'll keep mentioning you guys till the day I die, because I just always heard, well, social media is negative. It's toxic. And I think if anybody's listening to this right now and they find themselves logging off Twitter because you're drained, or logging off social media because you're drained, you need to make a decision to either get rid of it or choose to follow positive, uplifting people who are going to put good things into your mind. You know, I'll go back to pretty much everything in my faith now, but as a man thinketh, so is he, right? And what you put into your mind, that's something that I just discovered from you guys early, is then, you know what, if I do wake up every day, and this is what I used to do, Zuby, I'd wake up, I'd hit snooze a few times, and I'd read the news. Oof. And guess what happens when you read the news?
First thing in the morning.
You're so stressed. Like, I'm absorbing all the problems of the world, which my brain is not designed to happen, right? Well, now guess what, man? I wake up, you know, I journal, I meditate, do all my things, right? And then, dude, when I'm consuming things on the internet, it's guys like you who are maybe challenging me to be better, or I'm seeing you kill at the gym, or I'm seeing you give a great piece of advice for mindset, or I'm seeing Cynthia Thurlow put something out on fasting that literally changed my diet and my whole life. You know, like, you can seek out these positive people now and honestly build relationships with them. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting here with you, man, is so, it's almost like I had to pinch myself. I told my wife before I came on today, if somebody had told me 3.5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, man, you'll be on the Zuby podcast, I'd have been like, ha, yeah, like, I'm just a dude, right? I'm just a dad who like wakes up and wants to go to the gym and take a walk every day, and the rest is details, right? Play with my kids. And so it is wild, but I think it shows that power of consistency. And if you're really intentional with where you let your mind go, you have to give up certain things to get there. Again, I don't consume the news. I don't consume what these other people are telling me. I only allow these really positive things into my mind, but I do feel like anybody can do that now. And it's never been easier to find those positive community and find it. You know, if you used to just live next to toxic neighbors and had a toxic boss, you were kind of screwed, man. You know, like, yeah. But now you know, I'm in a men's group where we got guys from 3-4 different nations and we connect every single day, right? That's available to anyone who's willing to search for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it also shows us how we underestimate ourselves. And this is one of my points I'm always trying to get across to people, is that everyone is more powerful than they think they are. Right. I was even trying to get this across during the whole scamdemic time, when I was like, man, like, as a one person, like, you can break the matrix, right? You can put a crack in it. You can put a dent in it. You know, I know we had this conversation, right? When we met in Las Vegas, right? And I was just like, don't wear a mask. Like, just don't do it. It'll be fine. Like, just don't do it. And then you do it, and it's like, okay, like, hey, actually, wait, like, I can do this thing, right? And I'm just like, yeah, like, that's all it takes. Like, just don't do it, right? If someone really, really wants to fight you or stop you from boarding a flight or something, then okay, you might need to temporarily acquiesce. But this is the thing. That's how people end up in that sort of slave mind situation, because they don't see their own power. They just think, oh, well, you know, the elites are there, and they're going to, you know, run their little program or whatever, and we all just need to fall victim to it. And I'm just like, no, like, we control the world. People are always wanting to know, like, who controls the world. We do. We do. Collectively, we control the world, right? Yes, there's politicians. Yes, there's government agents. Yes, there's large corporations. Yes, there's media companies. And they're very influential, and they have a lot of money. But you choose what you consume, right? Like, if you want to be following the, you know, consuming 8 hours of mainstream media a day, like, that's up to you. Like, it's the same with food, right? People are like, oh, but, you know, there's all the advertising, and there's all these fast food companies, and there's all this junk in the grocery stores. I'm like, dude, I shop at the same grocery stores as everyone else. I live in the same world as everyone else. Like, I the same fast food is available to me. I don't have to eat it. I don't have to consume it, right? Like, yes, there can be pressure, there can be temptation, there can be this. But, and the thing is, that's funny, is once you get away from it all, as you've mentioned before, once you get away from it, you don't even want, like, you're repelled by it. I'm like, I don't even want that. Like, that doesn't even appeal to me. That looks awful. Like, that's like, I don't want that.
If I'm at the gym now, man, and some days they'll, you know, if I'm warming up with cardio, they'll have like CNN, Fox, they'll have the news across the screen. And it is like, it's the Matrix, man. It's like, once you see it for what it is, you kind of can't unsee it. And you're like, I know exactly what they want people to think. This is why they're reporting on this thing. They're trying to get the masses to buy into this, you know? And I do remember, man, when I scooped you up at the airport and we're hanging out, and you kind of issued me a challenge, like, hey man, if you don't believe in it, like, why are you doing it? You know? It was just like, you know what? He's really right. And I think I told you later, but I had several encounters after that where, you know, I can think of one time just being at a grocery store and I had a guy come up to me and rip his mask off and go, I said a word I won't say, but like, you know, and he gave me a bro hug and he's like, it is ridiculous, man. Like, I'm not doing it anymore either. You know, I had several encounters like that at my gym and at other places. And I felt like, you know, not to be overly dramatic about this, but if there wasn't people like you kind of speaking common sense into this stuff, I don't know that we'd 3 years in, man. It was 2 weeks to stop the spread, right? But if people collectively didn't just have enough and say, look, I'm a free individual, I want to make my own choices as a free human, I'll live with the consequences of my choices. And I think that's why you're very threatening to a lot of people, because you treat personal responsibility, right? And that's against the mainstream message. But it is like, you know, we all have that choice and that freedom. And without that, we really have nothing. There's really not much point to life if we don't have that, the freedom to make our own mistakes, even.
Yes.
The freedom to choose, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. And for me, that was why it was so important. Like to this day, even though, you know, it's, you know, we're three years into this, you know, situation now, but, and obviously things have generally calmed down now, although it's still not totally back to normal. So many people to this day still don't understand like my stance on like the mask thing, because they don't see beyond the mask, right? They're just like, oh, but it's just a piece of cloth. It's just, and I'm like, you know, it's not. It's not. It symbolizes like, and it, again, it's not just the mask itself, although I do have problems with that. It's the mandates. It's the allegiance. It's the unquestioning, not questioning authority. It's forcing people to do things that don't even make sense to them, right? That's the part of it. And I was like, that's how they get you. Like, if they can program you to do things that you know do not make sense.
Wait a second, bro. Like, are you telling me that it wasn't scientific that I wore a mask and they would seat me and I could take my mask off at the restaurant and then I had to wear it again to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and I had to wear it again on the way out, and I had to, mm-hmm. you're telling me that's not based in science?
Well, you know, it might be the science. Dude, it was so nutty because, you know, I went to eight different countries during it. And, you know, you had some places had curfews, some places the curfews this time, some places it's that time, some places it's like the science is different in every single, you cross the border and the science is different now, you know, you cross that border, the science is different. And I'm just like, this is the most stupid thing I have ever witnessed in my life under the banner of science. That was the thing that was just so, I'm glad that people have mostly snapped out of it by now, but that was the thing that just was like driving me mad. And people were just like, oh, like, why does it bother you? And I'm like, if I can't like explain it in a certain way, then maybe there's just some people like, I just can't kind of reach, like they just won't get it because they don't see beyond the matrix. They're just like, it's just about health and safety. And I'm like, no, it is not. I'm not opposed to health and safety. Like when it comes to genuine health and safety, I will do what's in my power to not put other people in harm's way or, you know, any, like, needless to say, but that's not this. That's not what this is. And they're weaponizing that language and people's better nature. The only reason this whole thing even worked is actually because most people are quite good natured. So when you use that language of health and safety and whatever, you're using it as a weapon to force people to give up their freedoms under the banner of being a quote unquote good person, which to me is even more disgusting because you're not appealing to people's bad nature even, you're appealing to their good nature. And this is why you're then getting friends and families fighting each other. Because you framed it in the way that if you don't do X, Y, and Z without thinking, then you're a bad person. And now that was to me what was so gross with it. Like when I'd been to all these places, I mean, I was in Australia a few months ago when, you remember, they went crazy. And some of the stories I was just hearing, talking to people, like, because they went even further than the USA. They went even further than the UK. And I was just listening to some stories from people. And I was like, dude, like, I had people telling me just like their experiences over, you know, 2020 to 2022. And, you know, some people, I had multiple people start crying, just telling me about their personal experiences. And I'm just like, this is wrong. Like, this is how, this is horrible. Like, this is not, I don't know.
Do you remember, I'm sure you do, when we left that dinner with a bunch of our friends here in Vegas, and that gal just saw you on the street randomly and came up and just burst into tears. And she said, never forget, something to the effect of, thank you for saying what I wish I could say every day at my company. And I think there were so many people that felt trapped. And, you know, I was still in a corporation when it happened. And it was like, you could not, if I mentioned to my people, hey man, the best thing we can do is go out for a daily walk in the sun, that would be literally the best thing we could do right now instead of mask for 10 hours a day. I mean, bro, I could lose my job for saying something like that. You know, it became such a weird kind of thing. And I think that, you know, you brought maybe some power to people who felt like he's saying all the things I'm thinking, but I'm not allowed to say. And then, you know, if you really think the next level, it goes back to what you said. If we all just said it, they would have no power, right?
Nothing.
And that's kind of where you unlocked my next level, I think, because, you know, I'll never forget going into the gym when our gym still had the ridiculous rule, man. And I walked in and the guy said, hey man, you have to wear your mask. And I said, I don't have one and I'm not going to, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, do you really believe in it? And he goes, no, man, not at all. But it's like my job and I gotta, and I said, bro, if you don't believe it and I don't believe it, like, you do what you got to do. If you feel like you need to call the cops and they need to drag me out of here for trying to lift weights by myself, not, you know, then you do that, you know, but I'm not going to pretend anymore. I refuse to play that game. And I'm like, if we all just refuse to play that game, guess what? There is no game anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the power of that ripple effect. That's where, you know, if you had never poured into me, I never would have poured into other people. I never would have, you know, whether that be around the scandemic or just being a better person or mindset or a locked in father or whatever that is, right? Like, I mean, I joked with you not that long ago, bro, I'd probably be on like my 19th shot right now. Did you hear monkeypox? Monkeypox. It's crazy when you're unlocked, but you see the things that they feed you constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, if you're afraid, you're easy to control, right? And so once you kind of see that and you break free from that, it's, I mean, it's almost laughable to me at this point, but I still have people I love that are kind of trapped in that. And it, you just want them to break free so bad, man. Like, you do.
Yeah. Well, the longer it goes, the harder it is, because it just becomes an ego problem, right? At this stage, it's just ego, right? It's like, you know, and people also don't want it. It's like the sunk cost fallacy, right? If you really had been locking yourself in your house and diligently wearing your mask all the time and taking all your shots and doing this and that, and you almost mentally are incapable of accepting, like, all of that was pointless, right? Like the Rona is still out there. Everybody still got it. It didn't matter whether you followed the rules or you didn't, or this or that. Like, everyone, it just, you know, all you did was destroy the economy and ruin a lot of people's lives for a long period of time. And yeah, that's the part that I find funniest, is I'm like, the virus is, it's like, it's still out there.
Right.
It's just people stopped caring. It's just like, it's still there.
One day, man, they just basically said, like, yeah, like, I'll never forget the day they said, you don't need to quarantine for 2 weeks. You know, if you don't, I just rest for 5 days. And then it became, my daughter didn't even need to rest for 5 days. If you're not showing symptoms, just keep coming to school. It's no big deal.
Like the flu.
Literally overnight.
Like the flu. You know? Yeah, like the flu or the cold. And that was my thing. Like, from early on, I was just like, well, let's just do what we do anyway. And look, some people are going to get sick. Sadly, some people, a percentage of people who get sick are going to get hospitalized. A percentage of people who get hospitalized are going to die. This has been human life our entire lives and far before it, right? Like, we don't have the power to just, you know, I it's funny. I think this is actually where the sort of secularization of society actually played quite a big role on two fronts. I think number one, the sort of complete discomfort with human mortality. I think that really, really shone through. And I think part of that is, you know, just having an increasingly secular society, but then also the sort of hubris of thinking that we can stop nature from occurring. Right? Like, this idea that you could, I mean, we can't stop this. I said this to so many people, especially early on. I was like, bro, we can't even stop the cold, the common cold. we can't, which has been around for I don't know how long, but we can't stop. We don't even know how to stop the cold. We don't know how to stop the flu. Like we can't. Every single year it comes around, millions and millions of people catch it and get sick. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, the best you can do is stay vitamin C'd and D'd up and generally be healthy. But even still, you're still going to get sick sometimes. So I'm like, if we can't do this, like what is possessing people to think that you're going to be able to just like stop this new thing in its tracks? Like that's not, and people are, oh, well, you're not a doctor. You're not a scientist. I'm like, no, but I have common sense, right? Like it's like we have a whole family of these viruses and we can't stop any of them. So how is like sitting in your house and eating Cheetos and watching TV for 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years? Like when I'm like, well, even if you could delay it, I'm like, well, when people go out again and start interacting, it's gonna just come back. And this happened in country, like especially places like Australia, New Zealand, where they like locked down super hard and stopped people traveling and all this. And all that happened is they delayed it. That's all that happened. It's like, okay, you know, for some time you managed to contain it a little bit. Same thing happened with China. That's why China's gone back into lockdowns in 2022 and all this. And I don't know, man. I just hope people have learned from it. That's kind of my biggest thing. My biggest fear is that I don't know if people learned the right lessons. I know some people did. Millions of people definitely did. But I'm concerned that they could kind of do the whole thing again and people don't, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I think maybe the narrative has crumbled enough at this point that I don't think they'd be able to pull this off again for quite a while.
Yeah, you made a good point. I remember during our dinner, you're like, you know, every time it gets a little more ridiculous and they kind of clench that fist, you know, some more people slide out the side. Yeah. And I feel like it got so ridiculous. Like even like, bro, like, you know, if you go protest, now look, I'm all for peaceful protest, go protest. But experts said it won't spread there, but it will spread if you go have, you know, a family dinner party.
Well, it depends on what you're protesting, Ty.
That's also true too, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you're protesting the lockdowns,
yes,
then that's a super spreader.
Yes.
If you're like protesting George Floyd, that reduces the spread. So the virus is sentient. It can tell the time. It can count. It has political affiliation. It travels at a certain height, which you can duck. It knows when you're eating or drinking. It knows how many people you're with. Apparently. Everything would have made sense if that was true.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, when it got to those ridiculous levels, but I still had very smart people.
Yeah. You
know, smart people that I really loved that still were buying into this stuff 2 years in. And it became to a point where I just love them, man. You know, you laugh. It's like, again, man, it goes back to what you said at the beginning. I really think if you want to change the world, you always start within. And so yeah. You live in a way, I'm not going to talk down to you. I'm just going to live my life and show you it is okay. Like we're okay over here, you know, yeah, and
you're not dying either.
Yeah, we're okay. And so come join. And, you know, slowly but surely, you know, most people have, I think at this point, finally gotten out. But I think, you know, to a bigger point that probably speaks, there's so many people now that want to change the world by getting on Twitter and shouting every day, right? Everybody else or political or this or that. And I think even you who has a million plus people following you on just one platform, so we're talking multiple millions now, right? Like, bro, I'll never forget when I brought you here to Vegas, first thing you did was check to the gym.
Oh, yeah. You
know, like, hey, where am I getting my lift in tomorrow? You know? And starting to plan that I'm going to be healthy and I'm going to live these things, right? I'm not just going to sit here and tweet about XYZ. I'm going to live them. And I think those are the really powerful people in today's world, right? It's why do some people resonate and spread on social media or others? Well, it's because they're living their message and that inspires people. And in an age where so many people, man, just want to get up and shout at all the problems and every politician's quick to condemn the other side, but they're not really living it and giving you solutions. Well, when you have these authentic people then that come and they want to actually say, hey, do what I'm doing because it works, right? Like yeah. My mindset's strong. My body is healthy. I'm putting good things in my mind, all these things. That's very inspiring. And that's what people need today. And so I hope, you know, you keep inspiring people to do that. You unlocked me. That's for sure. I hope I can inspire and unlock a few more people down the road. And like you said, that ripple effect keeps going.
Yeah, for sure. I think what you have to do is you have to show people an alternative with it, pretty much everything. You know, you have to, people are always, you know, I think we have all these limited beliefs pushed on us all through our lives, For some people, it can come from parents or family. It can come from schools. It can come from the media. It can just come from, you know, your peers and all that. So people have all these limiting beliefs that they grow up with. It's interesting because children have fewer limiting beliefs than adults do. But then if you can kind of just show people, not just tell them there's an alternative, but just show them, and it's great that you can do this online as well, then that helps to unlock a lot of people over the over time, because they're like, wait, okay. And it can be on a microcosm, or it can be on a big level. It can be, as you know, something as silly as, you know, that whole mask thing, or it can be someone being on someone could be on Twitter or on Instagram and think that this platform is toxic and social media is bad, and then, you know, they just stumble or see someone who's using it for good and who's positive and who's inspiring or funny or this, and I say, oh, actually, okay, this tool can be used in this way. Or, oh, okay, look, oh, this guy is, if you work in a job that you dislike, and then you see or you meet someone who's genuinely loving their career, or who's built a company, or who is doing whatever, and you're like, oh, wow, okay, that is possible. That's inspiring, right? I think that's really the sort of best way to do it, because you just show people that alternative path. One thing I love about your account, and one thing I love about, you know, the way you live your life and what you're doing, is you show. I'll tell you how you inspire me. Is, you know, I'm not yet married, and I'm not yet a father, right? And when I see when you're putting out all your content with your sons, your wife, your daughter, and you're just kind of documenting some of the daily stuff, even if it's just going for a walk, or it's just like playing or whatever. Because, you know, in this society, especially for single people, there's so much, you know, the sort of propaganda pushed to men and women is a bit different. Some of it overlaps, but there's not a lot of sort of positive, I think for many decades, the whole idea of, you know, marriage and family and children, especially, there's been so much negative propaganda of, like, you know, having kids is the end of the world, or, you know, they're going to take up all your time, or it's horrible, or, you know, marriage is a scam, and this and that and that, like, you know, and all women are this, and, oh, and also all men are that, and like both sexes just get hit with all of this propaganda all the time. So I love seeing like wholesome family content on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook and all that, because, you know, I mean, I see it in the real world as well. I'm grateful to come from a family full of, you know, great intact families and marriages and all that. So I have plenty of positive role models, but a lot of people don't, you know, a lot of people don't. They've only just seen the downside. All they see is the downside, the negatives, the things that go wrong. And they need to see examples, and they need to see that positive path of, oh, actually, you know what, hey, these guys are making it work, that guy's doing that, actually, you know what, like, that looks pretty fun, like, actually, look, having that, this guy's got ten kids, and his life isn't ruined, like, he's having great fun, like, this looks cool. And I think people need to see that again, because you're not typically going to get it from the traditional media anymore. You used to have a lot more sort of these like family oriented programs, and it was a lot more like wholesome and positive, and it wasn't just like the dad is an idiot and he hates his wife and the wife hates him and the kids hate the dad and the dad hates just like there's so much of that, you know, and oh, he's probably there, someone's having an affair, and like someone's probably getting beat, like, I'm just like, man, we just need more of these positive examples. And just by doing your day-to-day stuff, which might even seem mundane to you, it's actually inspiring to other people who aspire towards those same things. For me or you, having a workout might just be like, whatever, right? It's just like, I do this thing. But for someone else who's seeing it and who's watching that video of you, you know, going in the gym, or just seeing that, they're like, actually, you know what? Maybe I should get in the gym. Like, maybe I shouldn't skip today's workout. Actually, you know what? Let me go a little bit harder, you know? And so I think it's all important.
Man, I appreciate that. Means the world to me, man, for you to say that. And, you know, I was warned by many guys, I remember getting married, and bro, when you get married, your life is over. It's a prison. You're a bit, it'll drain you. Dude, can I tell you what I was doing right before I hopped on here, man? I was having relay races with my son. High five. They're two. I got 2 2-year-olds, man. And we were doing jumps. You got to jump over this or you get eaten by the crocodile. Dad, crocodile's con me. Bro, I have as much fun as they do every day. Like I, you know, and I do, I joke with my wife. It's hilarious to me that so many people kind of follow our family, you know, through our journey now, because to me, it is just like, I mean, we build forts and I'll just snap a quick picture of us playing in the fort. We go to the park every day. We go to the park for a couple hours and just run around and explore. And, but you know, I hear some of these guys saying to me, is marriage, and I'll get DMs once or twice a week now, man. Like just what you said, I thought marriage was a trap, a prison. Cause I talk about how much I love my wife, man. She makes me better. She's smart. She's intelligent. She's funny. She's my best friend. I love growing and dating my wife. 9 years in, I still get, we had an overnight date this weekend because our grandparents are here, right? We went and stayed on the strip and just, dude, we left. We had a great dinner. We had a great walk. We like, I love being a family man. I think it's so fun to me to get to, you know, get to have a squirt gun fight with your kids. Like, we don't get to do that as adults, right? But it's like socially acceptable for me to invite a couple dads over and be like, it's me and my daughter versus you and yours. And we just have a squirt gun fight. Like, to me, that stuff is so fun. And I've always said we can learn as much, I think, from our kids as we can teach them. If we do parenting right, I really believe that. You know, my kids are so present. They're so in the moment. And you know what my kids do every day? They just try things. Like my son will try and climb this for no other reason than to see if he can. Mm-hmm. And he might fall, but he's always going to get up and try again. And we have so many lessons I think we can learn from kids. And I'm grateful to be a dad because, man, there's nothing better in the world to me, to be honest, man, than getting to experience that every day with my kids. And I appreciate that you got to come over and meet my kids and my family. Yeah. That meant a lot too, man.
No, that's awesome, man. What are some of the biggest things I know you've been a dad for years at this point now. But going from being a not dad, what do you call a not dad? Going from not being a father to becoming a father, what were some of the things that sort of hit you the hardest?
I think number one, and this is what I coach a lot of married guys now around, I tell them, you got to really prioritize you and your spouse. So I think the big mistake a lot of people make is they put everything into the kids. Mm. Oh man, you know, and your relationship then with your wife becomes a little transactional. Did you get the diapers? Did you take the trash out? Did you do this? Me and my wife, our second biggest expense every month is we have a sitter come over 3 days a week, man. And some of the days it's just so her and I can take a walk or a bike ride together, like just so we can make sure we're still connecting. And so, you know, we talk about privilege, you know, and me and you have joked, like the biggest privilege my kids will have is nothing to do with anything else outside of the fact that me and my wife love each other. We're committed to having a house full of laughter, love, encouragement, support. And they're going to grow up in that environment knowing mom and dad are locked in. We love each other and we love you guys. And we're always there to support you. And so I think too many dads kind of lose that sense. And I didn't know that going in. So you really have to prioritize your spouse and carve out time, because it's not good enough, in my opinion, to wait until 8 o'clock at night when the kids are in bed. But bro, I've been up since 5, right? So my wife will not get my best at hour 15, you know? So it's important to carve those times out. And then the second thing is just to be present and have fun. Like your kids want nothing more than, you know, I think, again, society tells us you need to do we don't do Disney vacations, man. We don't do expensive toys. We don't do a lot of this stuff, but man, we're there for our kids every day. We're building the forts. We're taking sidewalk chalk out and creating little fun things and seeing if we can have a little obstacle course and a race and this and that. And those are the times, I think, if you think back to your own childhood, you know, me and my dad just shooting hoops, man, and having a talk, that I still think back, that's some of the fondest memories of my childhood. It necessarily wasn't a great present he brought me home. It was me and him being present together. And so just being locked in as a dad like that. And when you're with your kids, you're with your kids, you know, you're not thinking about that Instagram post that you gotta get to later. It's like really being locked in with them and you'll have as much fun as they will. Any dad out there, I challenge you, man. Like I got 2-year-olds and 7-year-old and dude, I have as much fun as they do every single day. And I think if you're doing parenting right, that's how it should be.
I love that, man. I mean, I'm blessed to have 9 nieces and nephews. So, you know, I'm the youngest of 5 in my family. So it wasn't until I became an uncle when I was 20 where I, you know, really got to sort of see people growing up in that way. And so, you know, I think, being an uncle to 9 and then having a few godchildren as well. I think that's, I haven't, I don't know when that bridge comes. I think I'll be prepped for it.
Yeah,
as best as one can be.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. In fatherhood, there's no playbook for it, right? There's things that are going to happen every day you're not prepared for. I always tell people I share the highlights on social media. So again, man, I probably change 10 poopy diapers a day right now. I'm not posting that on Twitter because everybody unfollow me if I show a bunch of poopy diapers.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't.
But I mean, there are so many fun moments every day. And one big takeaway, you know, in this self-improvement journey for me, if I tie it back in, is I think today is like day number 1840 in a row that I wake up and I write things I'm grateful for. And I recently was sick and I went back and I read through a lot of that. And the thing I noticed, Zuby, was most of the things I'm grateful for are those little moments with my kids. Those are the things I write, or even with my folks, or just, you know, connecting with human beings, having those moments of connection. It's not really stuff. It's not really fancy things. It's those moments of personal connection. And so I think you don't have to be wealthy. You can choose to be kind, optimistic, positive, and really pour into all the people around you. That's just a way you can change the world every single day, man. And it makes you feel better in turn too, because life's kind of like a mirror. What you put out comes back.
Amen. Tyler, where can people find and follow you online?
Man, come hit me up on Twitter. I am there every single day. Don't miss a day. I love the Twitter community. I'm always in the streets there, at Ty Romper. On Instagram too, I just started posting a little bit more over there. Same at Ty Romper. YouTube starting to grow a nice community over there as well. So come give me a follow over there, man. I'd love that. Same name, Tyler Tote, Ty Romper. But yeah, man, super grateful for everything. Grateful to be on here, Zuby. You're a man that I really admire, look up to, and learn from, man. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Tyler, man. Keep up the great work.
You too, bro.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.